Welcome to Hardwood Handicappers with Zach Cohen, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Zachary Cohen, VSiN.com senior editor, with another episode of Hardwood Handicappers. Hardwood Handicappers is sponsored by Better Picks, the fantasy app that turns your basketball takes into cash. Download the Better app and use code VSINPOD to get $10 free. No deposit needed. That's VSINPOD, V-S-I-N-P-O-D. We have a link for that in the description. Today, we're talking NBA Cup, and I'm joined by Nick Whalen, RotoWire senior analyst, host of the SiriusXM NBA Radio and SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, and, of course, a regular on our VSiN programming. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Doing well. A couple kind of ugly games last night to kick off the NBA Cup quarterfinals, but nonetheless, looking forward to diving in on Knicks Raptors, Magic Heat, and then, of course, we got two big ones out west tonight, and excited to be here. You know, I've been chatting with you and Michael Cohen about this for a while, and something I've been looking forward to and can't wait to get going.
Yeah, we should start with last night. I had an awful night. I ended up taking Miami. I saw they were up 13-0. I ran in to go pick up dinner for my wife and I, and I got back to the car, and the game is like very close again, and I knew from there that it was heading in the wrong direction. Did you have anything in that Miami-Orlando game?
I did okay in that game overall. I had Desmond Bane over 4.5 assists. I had Anthony Black over 3.5 assists, which I thought was kind of almost like a bait number. I'm like, all right, no Franz Wagner. I think we're going to see a lot of Anthony Black tonight. So played both of those in that market. I did have the under 235.5, which we'll talk more about that. I mean, this is now continuing last year's trend of these NBA Cup games being low scoring overall. But I capped it all off with the Miami money line, Zach. So that one looked great. You know, when they were up 15-0, they're up, I think, as much as 16 in the early going, you know, really held that lead even throughout much of the second quarter. But just a total collapse, I thought, offensively for Miami. 2-for-17 on wide open threes last night. And if you watch this game in the second half, that absolutely passed the eye test.
Yep. Yeah, I had that written down as well. Like 24% from three for Miami, 47 for Orlando. Desmond Bane played his best game in an Orlando jersey, so he definitely did well there grabbing the assists. But yeah, I thought that the Magic just shot the ball incredibly well on long twos as well. And it's funny, you mentioned Anthony Black. Like, I did not even see the assist number. Should have definitely jumped on that. But I do think that, like, having a player with his size is a huge luxury when you're talking about, you know, Wagner going down for a long period of time, because, you know, he can slide in and play some three because he can guard the three. And if he continues to shoot the three ball well, like he did earlier in the season, it has slowed down since then. It's maybe going to be, you know, a little bit better than I thought it would be in these next 2 to 4 weeks as they play without Franz.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think you see him listed as a point guard and you think, oh, you know, he's not going to help them at all without Franz Wagner. But, you know, he's one of those guys that could kind of play multiple positions. You know, really everybody that Orlando was throwing out in the primary rotation last night outside of Wendell Carter, who had three assists of his own. But, you know, Banchero, Bane, Suggs, Black, all those guys can pass. They were moving the ball really well last night, generating quality shots. Even Tristan Da Silva, who's maybe, you know, the kind of one-to-one positional match for somebody who will see more minutes without Franz Wagner. You know, he's not much of a playmaker, but I thought gave them some really good minutes, 28 minutes off the bench, 11 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists for him. It, really, though, this just came down to Miami missing so many open threes. I mean, Norm Powell at one point had, I think, 3 missed wide open threes on one possession. Tyler Hero, of course, had a big one at the end that would have made it a 4-point game. Miami probably wasn't going to win, but at least would have made it interesting. But this was, you know, one of the worst offensive games of the season for Miami. They had, I believe, their second worst offensive game against Orlando less than a week ago. So the Magic were struggling defensively early in the season. They're certainly not locking down and holding teams to like 94 points every night like they were a year ago. But it is a team that certainly has bounced back from some of those questionable games early on and starting to play much better defensively.
Yeah, it's funny with Miami because I think we've all given Spo so much credit for them playing like at warp speed and playing this new system this year. And he does deserve a lot of credit for just changing things up so much. But at the same time, they're like 15th in the league in adjusted offensive rating. Like, they have not been as good as you would think for a team that we're talking about as much on that end of the floor.
No, they haven't. And you know, for a good chunk of the season, they were playing really well offensively. But, you know, part of it has been, you know, since Hero came back, you know, there have only been a handful of games where he and Powell have been out there together. Davion Mitchell missed a game last week. So, you know, like every team in the NBA, you know, I think continuity in that rotation has been somewhat of an issue, but they just didn't get a whole lot out of their bench. You know, Orlando had only 18 bench points. All those came from Da Silva and Goga Batadze. But you know, Jaime Jaquez didn't have a great night. You know, he was missing a lot of the, you know, the shots inside that he would typically make. We didn't see a whole lot of Khalil Ware in this game. You know, Pelle Larsen actually ended up getting hurt after playing only 11 minutes. So ended up being kind of a big strain on that starting lineup for Miami. And again, when you're going 2 for 17 on open threes, when you're 8 for 33 from downtown, and you know, Orlando has one of its best 3-point shooting games of the year, you're just not going to win the math battle very often there.
Yep, 100%. What about the other game? Did you have anything in Knicks Raptors? I ended up jumping on Toronto when it got to 7.5, and I just did not feel great about that pretty much right away.
No, the one thing I played in that game was just Mikal Bridges over 1.5 steals, because he hits that every single night. He's, you know, way up there in terms of steals and blocks leaders in the NBA. That's been kind of one of my pet props this season. But no, I stayed off of the side. I stayed off of the total there, which this was another game that ended up going way under. Was looking pretty dicey heading into the fourth quarter. And then, you know, much like the Magic Heat game, you know, the Knicks started really slowing things down over the last 4 or 5 minutes. Toronto just could not buy a basket down the stretch. And, you know, I think they combined for 45 points only in the fourth quarter. But yeah, you know, I had questions about Karl Anthony Towns coming in as well. I mean, we didn't know until like 25 minutes before game time if he was going to be out there. So that was kind of in my head as far as the side goes. And I didn't think Towns looked all that good. He finished with 14 and 16, had a couple of blocks. Like, he played well, but still looked a little bit slow to me, looked a little bit groundbound. I was kind of surprised that he played through the calf injury, just because of how many of those have turned into more serious injuries of late. But this was just a really, really good defensive game by the New York Knicks, and a game that was played more so at their pace. I mean, 93.8 pace in the second game compared to closer to 102 in that Magic Heat game. And you certainly felt that. And, you know, without Emmanuel Quickley for Toronto plus RJ Barrett, like they could survive against a good team without one of those guys. But You kind of felt the lack of offensive options. It was a lot on Brandon Ingram and a lot on Scottie Barnes, who did not have a good night.
Yeah, and I was with you with Towns. I was really surprised to see him play. I've actually been wrong on the last two of those calls, with him with the calf and Dylan Brooks the other night had Achilles soreness, and thought both of those would sit out. Both of them played, but I guess these guys aren't being as careful as we think they're going to be. But it was an interesting game for me, just because I thought that, you know, we've seen the Knicks throughout the course of the season kind of pack the paint and really prioritize, like, you know, preventing guys from getting good looks at the rim. And, you know, they've done that at the expense of guarding 3-point shooters. I actually thought that they defended the 3-point line really well last night, and it was kind of an impressive showing in terms of, like, this is a team we want to see play well in the playoffs. Yeah. And you know, that is a playoff like setting, and you know, it was a good defensive performance for a team that I have a lot of question marks about on that end of the floor.
Yeah, no question. I thought, you know, defensively Towns was really good. You know, having OG Anunoby, of course, back in the mix is huge. OG and Bridges are playing so well defensively this season. And again, not having Quickley and Barrett, you know, it's not unsurvivable if you're Toronto. But look, if you were like a semi-casual fan tuning in for the NBA Cup quarterfinals, and you got to get to your TV for this game, you're like, wow, that's a lot of Ochai Agbaji. We're seeing a lot of Sandro Mamukelashvili in this game. Jacoby Walter actually played pretty well for them off the bench, but that rotation shortened up pretty quickly, you know, without two of their primary guys.
Yeah, and I'm usually a proponent of more Mamu, but it didn't look great last night. They needed the Quickley punch.
Yeah, they did. Just not a great night offensively for Toronto. 107.7 offensive rating. And you know, another team that struggled from three. Like you said, Knicks did a good job defending it. 11 of 38, 29% for Toronto. And Knicks almost shot 50% from beyond the arc. And you know, a lot of that was Jalen Brunson. He had a huge first half. You know, Bridges didn't end up having a great night offensively, but I thought hit some timely shots. You know, the Knicks basically led by like 12 to 15 for most of the second half. And you kind of felt like there was some momentum every now and then. Raptors would get it down to 9. They'd get it down to even 10 or 11 every single time the Knicks had an answer. And it never really felt like Toronto was going to come back and steal this game.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's start talking about tonight's games. We'll start with the Suns at the Thunder. This game tips at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. The Thunder are laying 14.5. The total's 225.5. Do you have anything in this one?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting game. You know, once again, OKC laying a huge number. You know, you look at the ATS numbers for OKC this season compared to last year when they were covering at, what, almost a 70% clip. They're only 13-11 against the spread. I think part of it is it took a while for the market to fully catch up last season, where, you know, numbers were much shorter than they should have been until, like, you know, middle of the year. So, you know, when you're laying like at least 8.5, it feels like every single night it's going to be a little bit tougher to put up a crazy ATS mark. But they are just 9-7 against the spread as a double digit favorite. So I don't think we can totally count Phoenix out here and just assume this will be a total blowout. Number was 15.5 yesterday, now seeing 14.5 at the DraftKings Sportsbook. We'll see on Devin Booker. Obviously that's a huge, huge inflection point for this game. They're saying there's a chance he could return tonight. You know, you as a Suns fan might have a better read on this than I do. I was hoping we would have news on that by the time we record this on Wednesday morning. But if Devin Booker doesn't play, I think you have to look at this as another potential under spot, maybe under on the Suns team total at 105.5. You know, they've scored 98 and 108 in two games without him. One of those came against Houston, who it feels like holds everybody close to 100 points. The other was against Minnesota. But if you take the two games last night, which finished at 225 and 218, and then you look at the NBA Cup in total last year, quarterfinals, semifinals, and the finals, we have not had a game since the 2023-2024 NBA Cup that finished over 225. I mean, every single number has been, you know, either in the low 220s or significantly lower than that. You know, it's still a small sample. You don't want to just say that that's totally gospel, but we know what OKC is capable of defensively. So if Booker's not out there, I think this does become an underspot for me.
Yeah, and I actually think, like, I was leaning under a little bit in this game too. I don't have anything here in terms of size or total, but you look at the pace of play too. Like, OKC's a middle of the pack team in pace. The Suns are in the bottom 10 in the league. I don't think either of these teams, like, really wants to play fast either. So you throw that on top of the fact that OKC's defense is great, and you add it to, you know, potentially Booker being out or at least hampered in some way. I have no read on the Booker situation. I mean, the fact that he was upgraded to questionable, that's generally feels like you're going to see him play. I mean, like, you go from out to questionable, it's generally like what you see. Yeah. But at the same time, like, I don't know, if you're in the front office, you're the coaching staff, like, you're probably not going to win this game. Like, you might want to just hang him out there an extra couple of days.
Yeah. What? Zach, it's the NBA Cup, man. You do what you can. It's the NBA Cup quarterfinals. You got to play in this game if you're Devin Booker. Now, I wouldn't be surprised either way. You know, and it's not like he's missed a month, right? It's like, if he comes back, I wouldn't worry a ton about rust. You know, I wouldn't worry a ton about, you know, a minutes limit. But I think you're right. You know, Phoenix kind of recognizes the situation they're in here. At the same time, we did see these teams play not that long ago, back on November 28th. That was an OKC 4-point win, 123-119. It was tied after the first quarter. OKC led by only four at the half. Suns went 15 of 44 from three, turned it over 18 times in that game, and still only lost by four. The Suns have kind of done this all year, right? Where they'll look like they're overmatched. You know, we certainly had lower expectations for this team than we do right now, and they have kind of found a way to play up to their competition. So I won't be surprised, you know, if the Suns find a way to do that again. You know, I was also looking at the OKC second half spread. That could be another way to attack this. I mean, unsurprisingly, they've been both the best first and second half team in terms of margin, but Phoenix has been a much better first half team than they've been a second half team this season. So that could be another way to try to kind of creatively attack that number.
Yeah, I mean, if you do see Booker out there, I would lean Phoenix with the points. I mean, just because I do think that they played them about as well as anybody has all year outside of that first game against Houston. And the Suns are, I believe, 16-8 against the spread this season. So I think that's tied for first in the league with the Knicks. So they've been a very good covering team. And I do think that they have a little bit of, you know, just feistiness that they're going to go out there and try to fight this team, even though, you know, the Thunder have all the best defensive players in the league, it seems. But I do think this is a game that can be a little bit more competitive than people think if Booker's out there. If Booker doesn't play, it has the potential to get ugly, just because I do think that the Suns are lacking in shot creation at the moment.
I, you know, like a lot of games in the NBA these days, I think it is just going to come down to, all right, how many threes are Royce O'Neal and Colin Gillespie and Grayson Allen making? Because that, I wouldn't say it's a hole for OKC, because they do defend the three fairly well. Obviously, they're the best defensive team in the NBA. They're allowing the fewest points per game in the NBA. But they do give up a lot of threes. I mean, they're top 10 in the NBA in terms of opponent three-point attempts. Phoenix in the top 10 in terms of volume. They're just outside the top 10 in three-point percentage. So especially if Booker is out there helping you generate some more of those quality looks, I think that's, you know, unfortunately, it's kind of, you know, simple analysis, but I think that's kind of the key for the Suns hanging in this game. You know, if you get a Grayson Allen 2 of 9 from three performance, that's probably not going to get it done. But yeah, you know, that the Suns are putting 3, 4, 5 shooters on the court at all times, and I think that's kind of their ticket to hanging around.
Yeah, and I will say, like you mentioned Gillespie too. Like if Booker doesn't play, Gillespie over on points and assists is something that I'd be pretty interested in, just because his role becomes that much bigger. And I feel like the books have not caught on to how good he's been playing. Like I do think that you see over these last couple of games, like they've been putting him at 16.5, 17.5. But you know, when Booker's not out there, he's really a threat to score 20 plus, even in a bad matchup like this. So I'd be looking that way. I actually did end up playing Mark Williams over 9.5 points. I put this on the VSiN Pro Picks page last night at minus 120. He scored 10 plus in 8 consecutive games, also 9 of the last 10, and he did have 13 when they faced OKC last game. And I know that this Thunder team is very good defensively at the rim, but at the same time, Hartenstein's one of the few players that is out tonight. That's one of the better, you know, low post defenders in the league. And I think that as good as Chet is, you know, Williams is a big, strong body that I think kind of put him under the rim a little bit.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I had that in my notes as well, where it's like this is a low enough number where I'm with you. I think you have to go over. If this was like 12.5, I think I might lean under, just because OKC has been so good. Like you said, number one in terms of limiting points at the rim. They're number one in limiting points in the paint overall. And yeah, the Hartenstein absence really matters. You know, Hartenstein didn't play in the first matchup against Phoenix, where Williams did score 13. So we can at least use that sample as something that is representative. And you know, especially if Chet Holmgren gets in foul trouble, all of a sudden things get a little bit thin up front for OKC. And as long as this game is relatively close, you know, as long as OKC just doesn't have one of those first halves where they're up like 22 at the break, I think we see enough of a workload from Mark Williams where he probably gets there.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, like, I was going to write in my VSiN column today. It's like the only reason that I really would hate this play is if the Thunder are up 30 at the end of the third quarter.
Right. Which is always a possibility, unfortunately.
Yeah, always. Do you have anything on the player props in this game?
So I'm looking at what feels like a pretty friendly number for Jalen Williams, over 18.5 points. You know, it's been up and down, obviously, since he's come back. Really has just depended on whether or not he's shooting it efficiently, still kind of settling in. But I'm encouraged by the underlying numbers. Like, usage rate is right in line with where it was last season. Obviously, you know, the minutes loads have been a little bit lighter in some of those games. And you know, I think in theory, Phoenix has some bodies to throw at Jalen Williams, guys who profile as reasonable defenders against him. But at the same time, you also need to sell out to stop SGA. OKC just puts threats on the court at all times. So I will take the over 18.5 on Jalen Williams. Would also look at the over 4.5 rebounds for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He had 8 rebounds in each of the first 2 Cup games last year against Dallas and Houston. That Houston team in particular was like the best rebounding team in the NBA a year ago. Without Isaiah Hartenstein, you know, that opens things up a little bit in terms of guard rebounding. And this is just the type of prop that I like to play in what feels like at least somewhat of a playoff setting. Like, I'll hand it to Adam Silver. These games feel important, even though the court looks weird, even though it's weird to have, like, you know, these semi-playoff games on a Tuesday in December. Like, guys do play hard. Defense is ramped up, and you tend to see kind of increased intensity from key players and guys who, you know, like SGA, if this game is close, could play close to 40 minutes. So, you know, I look at the over 4.5 rebounds for him. I like the over 8.5 for Luka Doncic in the late game. Just kind of a, you know, a playoff feel type of bet. And that's something I've rode with LeBron James many times over the years. Like, an important game, LeBron tends to rebound significantly harder. And I think that's the case for a lot of key players, a lot of stars around the league.
Yeah, and I think the fact that, like, you brought it up, like, all the unders in these games, like, speaks to the fact that these games are a little bit more important. You would not see that in a normal regular season game. So these guys are treating them as, you know, pseudo playoff games, or at least something a little bit lower, but more than a regular season game, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I think the guys care. They maybe it's the money that's on the line. We saw, you know, Desmond Bane had a great quote after the game. You know, he was, of course, fined for whipping the ball at OG Anunoby the other day. And he's like, hey, I just lost $35K. I got to find a way to get it back. Yeah. So, you know, it feels like kind of chump change compared to the salaries that these guys are making. And I know fans have been a little bit slow to come around on the NBA Cup, but the NBA has at least succeeded in making these games feel important. You know, players are certainly not loafing it by any means. There's a notable uptick in intensity and defensive intensity in these games.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we'll move on to the next game. But first, I wanted to say, if you missed it the first time, good news. We're giving you one last chance to score an unforgettable Vegas weekend at Circa Resort and Casino. Right now, the first 100 new VSiN Pro annual subscribers who sign up using promo code CIRCA will receive a free 3-night stay at Circa Resort and Casino January 2nd through 5th, plus a day bed at Stadium Swim during the final weekend of the NFL regular season. You'll also save 50% off the monthly price and get a full year of VSiN Pro. That's daily best bets, exclusive betting splits, It's AI-powered prop tools, 24/7 video, and every betting guide from the college football playoff through next year's NFL. This is your last shot at the Circa getaway, so don't wait. Lock in your spot at vsin.com/circa and use promo code Circa. That's vsin.com/circa. All right, I just mentioned we're going to move on to Spurs-Lakers, so let's talk about it. The Lakers are laying 7.5 in this one. Total's 239.5. Game tips at 10 p.m. Eastern. Do you have any thoughts on this game?
Well, first of all, we had a pretty significant line move with the news that Victor Wembanyama will not play. So that was sitting 4.5 yesterday evening, you know, quickly moved to 5.5. And then I wake up this morning and it's sitting at 7.5. So a lot of buy-in now on the LA Lakers. Understandably, Lakers did win the first matchup between these teams in the normal regular season, but that was with Wembanyama, without LeBron, no De'Aaron Fox. Yeah, I'm not sure there's a whole lot that we could take necessarily from that sample. I do think the Spurs team is really scrappy. You know, they've played really well. I think all things considered, without Victor Wembanyama, we've seen, you know, De'Aaron Fox carry this offense. You know, a lot of guys stepping up in terms of knocking down shots. They get Stephon Castle, you know, kind of fully ramped up now. He missed almost every game, you know, throughout that stretch without Wembanyama, and they were still one of the better teams in the NBA. This is one that I have trouble with the side as 7.5. You know, I guess I would slightly lean toward taking the points with San Antonio, but you know, when the Lakers have Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, LeBron James out there in full force, you know, especially if all three of those guys are engaged, and we believe this is going to be a playoff setting, the offensive talent is a little bit overwhelming. You know, what they've been able to open up specifically for DeAndre Ayton, watching these last few Lakers games, is like borderline comical, the amount of easy looks that he's getting. And that was something we talked about in the preseason, right? It's like, man, you have, you know, one of the three best passers of all time, in my opinion, in LeBron. You have maybe one of the 5 to 6 best in Luka Doncic, and even a really good playmaker in Austin Reeves. And, you know, obviously you have to key on all those guys. You're worried about Luka, you know, pulling up from three. You're worried about all of them off the dribble. And it's opened up so much for those role guys. So they're going to put a lot of stress on that San Antonio defense, not having Wembanyama. Not that I wanted him to play in this game, you know, to rush back for the NBA Cup, but that's a tough break defensively, because we are likely going to see Luke Kornet as the starting center for the Spurs.
Yeah, it's also another big one, because I think that there are people that are interested in Wemby winning Defensive Player of the Year, and it's another game that he's going to miss, and it's just getting really, really close to him missing that 65-game limit. So he was at plus 400 yesterday. I feel like there's really no shot he ends up playing at 65, so...
It's unlikely. Yeah, it opens things up for Jay Huff to win Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah. Oh, Jay Huff's the best. I should mention, like, I'm kind of with you. Like, I don't really feel strongly about the cider total here. I kind of have a lean on the Spurs at 7.5. Like, I just feel like that is a lot of points, and this is a team that I do think could present some problems for the Lakers. Like, I think that they have all of those guards that can attack downhill, and I think if there's a weakness with this Lakers team, it's that they're a little bit slow. So if San Antonio were to speed things up a little bit and try to play a little bit faster, that really would work in their favor. But at the same time, like, we haven't really seen that without Victor. Right. You know, the pace hasn't really been picked up all that much. So I'm really banking on what I'd like to see, as opposed to like what I think I've actually seen. So I don't know that I'm going to take it, but I did end up taking Julian Champagne over 9.5 points at minus 111. This is a guy that has played well without Wemby. He's at 10 plus in 7 of the 11 games that he's played without the big man. And we have seen the Lakers kind of struggle with these one-note shooters. I threw down like a bunch of the names on a list that have gone over their totals in recent weeks. It's Grady Dick, Max Christie, Klay Thompson, AJ Green, Gary Trent Jr., Veet Krejci, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Dante DiVincenzo, Buddy Hield. Like, these are the types of players that can find success against this Lakers defense. And I think that Champagne kind of fits the mold as just like a sniper from deep that isn't going to beat you in many other different ways.
Yeah, I like that call. He's coming off a big night, his last time out. And I think you can make a case for Devin Vassell as well. You know, he's been a really consistent piece for them, although it loses maybe a little bit with Castle back in the lineup. He was awful the other night, Vassell. I think he was 1 of 5, 1 of 6 from three, but the attempts tend to be there for both of those guys. I'm looking at De'Aaron Fox. I played this at over 21.5 points yesterday. It's now there are some 22.5s out there, mostly 23.5. I'm still fairly comfortable with that number. Last 10 games, he's averaging over 25 points per game. He's taken over 18 shots per game, getting to the line more than 8 times. Like, he is enjoying, I think, being the number one option for the San Antonio Spurs. And if there is a way you can really exploit the Lakers defensively, I think it is that guard defense with Luka and Austin Reeves. So I would look at the over on points for De'Aaron Fox. you know, one that jumped out to me in kind of the niche prop market just because of the price at plus 183 is Stephon Castle over 1.5 steals. He's one of those defenders who I think is more effective in real life than he is in terms of like racking up the counting stats, kind of Drew Holiday-esque, whereas like Drew Holiday was never, you know, putting up Dyson Daniels steal numbers, but I think we all respected his defensive cachet, and I think Castle's kind of in that category. But the Lakers have one of the highest turnover rates in the NBA. I think San Antonio is going to try to bring it intensity-wise defensively. So enough of a value at plus 183 that I'm at least considering the over 1.5 steals for Castle.
Yeah, that one's interesting. I feel like that's something I could definitely see happening here. Castle is a player that I've compared to Drew Holiday as well. So I like that you threw that comparison out there for him. And I did kind of have the same thought as you did, is like, I think that a lot of these guards on the San Antonio team that attack downhill like can have success. And that almost led me to a Dylan Harper play. Like, I'm just a little bit nervous about what the minutes are going to look like. But that guy is relentless at getting to the basket. And he's looked so good, even, you know, dealing with injuries throughout this rookie season. But man, what a player.
His finishing ability is pretty unbelievable for a first-year player. I mean, the body is certainly NBA-ready. The athleticism is as advertised. He's coming off of that 22-6 the other night against just a great New Orleans Pelicans defense. So that worries me a little bit, but we're getting his points prop at 12.5. You know, again, the minutes are the issue. Like you said, they bring him off the bench. You know, there's a lot of nights. You know, even now that he's fully ramped up where he's still playing like 22, 23 minutes, but then you look up and it's like, all right, 17 points in 20 minutes, 15 points in 21 minutes, 16 points in 22 minutes. Like, per minute wise, he's putting up, you know, even better numbers than the raw stats would indicate. So I wouldn't be opposed to taking the bait on 12.5 points for him. Also worth noting, you know, you mentioned the kind of the spot up shooting for the Spurs. Rui Hachimura, his 3-point prop is sitting at 1.5. He's gone over this number in 17 of 22 games this season. You can get that at plus 100. You know, I think there's still some concern about his workload settling in now that LeBron is fully ramped up. There's only been a handful of games with LeBron, Luka, and Austin Reeves out there. If this game is competitive, obviously all three of those will see big minutes. But I think if Hachimura could play 25 to 30 minutes tonight, which is reasonable, he's going to have looks, right, with Luka and LeBron setting him up. So if you're looking for kind of a trend prop play, maybe take a look at the over 1.5 threes for Rui.
Yeah, that is a good one. I mean, Hachimura, just the type of guy that, like, every time he shoots the ball, you think it's going in.
Which I would have not said when he was a Washington Wizard.
I know. Yeah, I would not have thought it either. But I should also mention, like, Dylan Harper to go over 3.5 assists is also something I might end up playing tonight, just because I believe he's had 5+ in 4 straight games. The last 2 games, he's had 11 potential assists in both of them. And like I said, like, this is another game where I feel like he's going to have some success getting to the basket. And, you know, maybe they meet him at the rim and stop him from scoring. Yeah. But I do think he'll be able to find some guys. So, yeah, I think the 4+ assists for, you know, a lead guard is definitely something that's worth considering, at least.
Yeah, Lakers are, I think, 24th or 25th in the NBA in terms of giving up opponent assists. And like every other team in that range is like the Wizards, the Jazz, the Pelicans, the Hornets, like some of the worst defensive teams in the NBA. So that has been an issue for them defensively. I like that call.
All right. And then before we get you out of here, I have a couple questions. So one, do you have any futures on the NBA Cup, and are you considering adding any at this point after having seen the bracket? I think I just saw this morning OKC is now minus 115 to win it. I think the Knicks are like plus 375, which I think is interesting because I do think that they'll get by, you know, that Franzless Orlando team. But yeah, anything that you have overall for the whole tournament?
Nothing in pocket. You know, as much as I love and respect the NBA Cup, I tend to bet it more game to game, you know, than I do, you know, looking at the futures market. I think the price on OKC is pretty reasonable, right, for a team that's been as dominant as they have. You know, the Knicks, I think, could give them some trouble. Certainly the Lakers, you know, if they play their best game, are fully capable of beating OKC. But getting this Thunder team that has just been so bulletproof at minus 115 to win the NBA Cup, especially sitting as a 14.5 point favorite tonight, I think is actually a pretty reasonable value. You know, if you want to get into the in-season cup MVP market, you could still get plus money on SGA at plus 100. You know, if you do think OKC goes down, you know, maybe you look at Luka at 7-1, you know, Brunson 5-1. It you know, all these teams kind of have an obvious guy. Orlando would be the exception there, where it could be Bane, could be Banchero. I also don't see the Magic winning the NBA Cup. But that could be one way to attack it. In general, though, I tend to bet this more game to game.
Yeah, I think it would be OKC or nothing for me. At the same time, like, I do think New York is something that maybe is worth taking, just because you get the ticket in the finals. You're probably not going to have those odds, so you could probably do something with it, but you never know. I mean, I have no idea what the spread's going to be in a Thunder Knicks neutral court setting. So it might not be all that much better.
Yeah, that's a good hypothetical. I don't know. My guess would be what, like 7.5, 8.5? I don't know. Is that am I giving too much respect to OKC there? I think that would be a low scoring game. I'll tell you that. That would, whatever the number is, I would take the under on that.
Yeah, I'm pretty tempted to say it'll be like 8.5 or 9, just given kind of what we saw in the last year's playoffs, where we saw OKC facing, you know, similarly good teams and laying big numbers. So that's the one thing that's kind of giving me pause with that Knicks play is, like, I don't know that the number is going to be that much better than what you'll be able to get down the road. So I'm not sure I'm going to take it. But one thing I wanted to ask you before we get you out of here again is, I asked you off the air if you are a Bucks fan. You know, I wanted to know if there's a Giannis trade out there that you think makes the most sense for Milwaukee and Giannis.
Well, unfortunately, this discussion has to begin with the fact that a player of Giannis's stature, a player who has the cachet that Giannis does with the Milwaukee Bucks, is not going to just be sold off to the highest bidder. You know, even if the Nets or the Wizards or the Hornets somehow were able to conjure up the best offer, I don't think the Bucks are just going to say, "Yep, too bad. We're sending you to, you know, some 6-win team. See you later." Giannis is ultimately going to maybe not be able to pick his specific destination, but at least give the Bucks a list of, like, you know, somewhere between 1 and 5 teams that he's interested in playing for. And look, Zach, you've followed the NBA for a very long time, as have I. We know how these deals tend to go. Every now and then, you know, you'll get a surprise destination. You know, Damian Lillard to Milwaukee, Donovan Mitchell to Cleveland. Those guys were not begging to get to those specific teams, but they at least were verified with their team. Like, hey, will you accept this? Because that's such a big part of these deals, especially when you're always on the clock, you're always thinking about that next contract, and, you know, a team doesn't want to bring a guy in who actively does not want to play for that team. So I think we have to kind of whittle down the list in terms of, like, realistic destinations, teams that Giannis would sign off to playing for. The Knicks obviously are at the top of the list. That's been all the reporting that, you know, back in August he tried to push his way to New York. You know, if the Bucks ultimately have to settle on, like, a, you know, Mikal Bridges, Karl Anthony Towns picks package, it's underwhelming. Certainly, you would hope to get more for Giannis, but the Bucks are stuck in this weird zone where they don't own most of their own picks until the 2030s. So it's like, do you want to try to remain somewhat competitive just to avoid, you know, handing over high draft picks to another team? Are you okay just totally bottoming out? Do you want more of a picks based package? I hope this is a multi-team deal, because I don't think there's a true, like, one-for-one, you know, Bucks versus another team trade that makes a ton of sense. I think you have to rope in another team to try to, you know, offload some assets, bring in some more assets via that third team. You know, the Hawks are really interesting. That's kind of been the pet trade that's going around on Bucks Twitter, as far as, you know, could you get Jalen Johnson? Would they throw in someone like Dyson Daniels? I'm really not interested in Trae Young becoming the face of the Milwaukee Bucks, I will tell you that. Atlanta is really interesting to me, but at the same time, if you're sending, say, Daniels and Jalen Johnson and multiple picks, what's left in Atlanta? Is that a markedly better situation than what Giannis is in right now in Milwaukee? I'm not sure it is.
Yeah, I think that the Knicks one, it's like, it's going to take an extra team or two, because it's going to have to take somebody that wants Towns or Bridges and is willing to give you picks, because it doesn't make a lot of sense for Milwaukee to take on Bridges or Towns. And yeah, Atlanta's interesting. I actually think I'd want to see Trey with Giannis. So, like, I would even want to see him in that deal. So I know that there's a lot of, you know, I don't know, he's a polarizing player, and I don't know if that would work. We just kind of saw Lillard and Giannis, I guess, to an extent not work, but I think that you'd want to see Trey with him. But at the same time, it does seem like the best asset that they might be able to get would be a Jalen Johnson. So that would probably be what I'd be rooting for if I were a Bucks fan.
Yeah, and that would be, if he's the centerpiece and you're getting picks in addition to that. You know, the interesting thing, obviously, is, you know, Atlanta has that potential New Orleans pick. They own some Bucks draft capital, so you could recoup some of that. You know, I don't know if Atlanta would be willing to part with Jalen Johnson and the potential number one pick from New Orleans. Yep. But I think that to me would get it done. I think that would be a relatively fair deal. And, you know, if you're Milwaukee, you basically have to accept that you're not getting 100% of a full trade offer here. You're probably getting 70 cents on the dollar, because that's how it works when you have a player like Giannis who can kind of whittle down his potential destinations. But, you know, Miami is the other team that I think will at least be in the mix. They're always in the mix in these situations. And, you know, like Jalen Johnson, they have a Milwaukee native on the roster in Tyler Hero, which unfortunately kind of does matter, I think, because Milwaukee is such an unappealing destination overall that, you know, having these Wisconsin connections with some key players who could be involved in the trade, guys who would in theory want to play in Milwaukee more than the average NBA young star would, I think is something that you have to consider. And know, with Miami, you have the Khalil Ware piece. You have Jaime Jaquez playing really well. You know, you have kind of a smattering of assets. You have future draft capital you could put on the table. So I don't know if it would be a one-to-one with the Heat, but I think they could be maybe that third team involved in this trade.
Yeah, it's funny. I think you keep hearing kind of the NBA insiders saying that if they get that pick from Terry Rozier that they you know, potentially are owed, like that makes them a major player in this trade. So, well, I guess we'll be waiting to see if that ends up going their way. I'm not sure it will.
That seems like it would be really backwards. It's like you somehow get rewarded for your player gambling on games.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the Miami Heat and things tend to break their ways. So I would not be surprised. I'll ask you, Zach, are there any teams in the Western Conference that you think could throw their hat into the ring? Obviously, the Lakers, you know, will be mentioned, and you know, maybe you could build something around Austin Reeves, but I don't think that would end up being a great deal for the Milwaukee Bucks. But the idea of Giannis somehow landing in the West and like further tilting the balance of power in favor of the Western Conference, I think that might make it more uneven than it's ever been.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Spurs and the Rockets both have really compelling packages if they're, you know, willing to make a move of that nature. Like, it's very big. I think that in San Antonio, it's like weighing whether or not we kind of let Harper and Castle just kind of grow with Wemby or we take a shot now. I mean, I think that you have, you know, I would be very interested in the idea of bringing Giannis in and losing one of those two guards, because I do kind of question what that fit's going to look like long term anyway between Castle and Harper. So I think that's really interesting to me. I mean, obviously, as a basketball fan, I'd love to see Giannis and Wemby on the court together and just kind of see what it looks like. And Houston, it's very similar too. If you can get him without giving up Thompson or Sengun, so if it's a package built around Eason, Shepard, picks, like it's an interesting idea.
If you're the Bucks, I don't think you can do that deal with Houston without Sengun or Amen Thompson. I love Tari Eason in fantasy basketball. I'm high on Reed Shepard. I don't think that can't be the centerpiece of a Giannis deal. I think you gotta be, it's Giannis Antetokounmpo, man, in the absolute peak of his powers. Like you gotta give something up. And maybe I'm just speaking too much from a Bucks perspective here, but yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the Spurs, because I think if you are looking for just a one-to-one trade, I think they're maybe the team that's best positioned to do it. They have draft capital, they have young players. Would they be willing to put Dylan Harper on the table? If so, that becomes very, very interesting. If I'm Milwaukee, I don't know that I would be overly excited to do that deal without Harper. But if you have to settle for, you know, a Castle-based package, you know, you have Devin Vassell you could throw in there. That still doesn't feel like quite enough for Giannis, but you know, the Spurs are one of those teams that can overwhelm them with picks. And again, you could always rope in that third team. I think that to me, that's the most, just from a pure NBA fan perspective, Giannis lining up next to Victor Wembanyama is the most fun scenario.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right, well, we'll recap our best bets soon. I just wanted to say first, time to put your hoops IQ to the test with Better Picks. Download the Better app and pick more or less on player stats like points, assists, and rebounds. Then track your lineup in real time. Use code VSINPOD to get $10 free, no deposit needed. And with up to 1,000x multipliers off just two picks, your hot takes can really pay off. Better Picks is live in 33 states. Download Better app and use code VSINPOD today. That's VSINPOD. And, you know, we've talked a lot about player props on the show today, so heading over there is definitely a no-brainer to get $10 free and see if you can, you know, win a little bit on what we've taken tonight. So let's recap our best bets for this evening. We talked a lot about these games. What are some of your official plays for tonight?
All right, I'll lock in three official player props for tonight that we've mentioned here. So give me SGA over 4.5 rebounds. Give me De'Aaron Fox over 22.5 points. And kind of that same line of thinking that we talked about with SGA, Luka Doncic over 8.5 boards in the late game.
Cool. All right. Awesome. And I have Mark Williams over 9.5 points at -120. Julian Champagne over 9.5 points at -111. And I'm on the fence about adding Dylan Harper over 3.5 assists. I think I'm going to end up doing it because I need a little bit more action considering I'm not going to be on a side or a total tonight. So I feel like I need a little bit more in the player prop space if I'm not going to be putting out something there.
I like it, man. I like it. This is where you come for Julian Champagne props for the NBA Cup. No one else has given you that kind of content. I do want to ask you that Spurs Lakers total is up to 240.5 now. I mean, that's up like 2 or 3 points from yesterday. How much do we put into this recent trend that I mentioned of all these unders? Again, I think we're now looking at like 9 straight NBA Cup games that haven't even cracked 225. Do we buck that trend tonight?
Yeah, I'm really confused by that. I saw it at like 235 yesterday at some point. So it's like seeing it up 5 points is insane. I'm not really sure what to make of it. I mean, yeah, the unders have been very good bets in the NBA Cup. But if it's going to be a game that's played at a really fast tempo with those players, it's going to be really tough to be sitting there hoping for an under.
It's also really not fun rooting for an under when you're watching the fourth quarter of an NBA game and just rooting against every wide open three going down. Like I bet way too many unders both in the NFL and the NBA, and it can be productive. It can be profitable. It does not make for an enjoyable watch.
Yeah, I always say that when I'm writing up my stories at VSiN.com. If it's like, if I take an under, I'm like, just don't watch. You don't want to watch.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's torturous. Yeah.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. I hope that everything's been going well with your baby girl, Lottie. I'm also recently a new dad of a little girl, so all I know what it's like. I hope that you are, you know, enjoying the experience. It's very, very fun, but obviously very tiring. And I know that doing what we do requires a lot of manpower, a lot of hours, you know, watching TV. So not the easiest thing in the world, but I hope that you were really enjoying the experience.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, man. And congrats to you as well. I know we've talked a little bit about that off air. It's been an awesome experience so far. I know your baby girl's a little bit further along, so you're probably chasing her around a bit more than I am. I mean, I got the easy job of like, all right, let's feed her, let's change her. Then I get a nice 2 to 3 hour window where I could sit down and watch these games every single night. But it's our cross to bear. I've been trying to explain this to my wife for years. It's like, yes, I actually do need to sit down and watch 6 straight hours of basketball again tonight for the 30th day in a row.
Yeah, my in-laws do not seem to understand that part.
Oh my God,
of it,
but yeah. God, that's a whole separate podcast.
All right, well, yeah, again, thank you for joining us, and I hope that everybody has some success with their bets tonight. Good luck, and join us for a Thursday edition of Hardwood Handicappers tomorrow.